Throughout the nation, local and state governments are working around the clock to come up with ways to continue delivering vital services while they slow down the advance of the coronavirus and tend to the rapidly growing cases of the virus. Currently, our region is the leading national hotspot for this unprecedented outbreak. With us now is WBGO's Bob Henley, who is a staff reporter for The Chief Leader, which covers the nation's public sector workforce. Bob joins us from his home. Bob, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
Bob, we now know that the latest infection numbers that both New Jersey and New York are dealing with a rapidly increasing number of cases of coronavirus that officials warn could overtax the existing healthcare system. Can you lay out for us maybe some of the contours of the crisis as it's playing out in our region?
Well, I think one of the things that we're seeing is that all the decisions we made in the past to downsize our healthcare system to be efficient and economical, trying to squeeze out redundancies, are now coming back to haunt us. So what we're seeing in both New York and New Jersey is healthcare officials revisiting those decisions, finding places where hospitals were recently closed or wings were downsized can now be put back into operation. The other challenge here is that we see local officials and state officials still waiting for an integrated federal response, but they really can't afford to wait for President Trump, and so they're taking matters into their own hands. One of the things we've seen that is hopeful is the leadership shown by our region's governors in coalescing together and developing in real time a uniform response that's been lacking from the federal government. So you see Governor Cuomo, you see Governor Murphy, you see Governor Lamont, and then to our west, Governor Wolf in Pennsylvania, all working together to try to address this thing because they really have to improvise. That is, they have to look at any potential capacity that exists in the public sector, whether it be dorms, National Guard armories, places that now can be pressed into service with the key goal of, as they say, and you're going to hear it often, is to flatten the curve. And that is a number of people coming forward who need critical care in response to the coronavirus. So this is something where they also at the same time have to make sure that they can keep their public workforce safe, because the lesson coming out of Italy, which is past China in terms of the number of fatalities, is the problem that occurs when you see your frontline responders, doctors, nurses, police, firefighters, begin to catch the virus, and then they are lost to the workforce, and indeed any of their colleagues that have been contaminated at that point have to self-quarantine. So this is really something where they have to stand up very quickly all kinds of systems to support those frontline workers while getting public engagement for people not to go to the hospital or seek medical attention unless they really need it.
We've seen over the last few weeks the public health messaging change as the crisis has intensified. Can you address for us and give us a sense of just what the latest public health message really is?
Well, what we've seen is that from the beginning of this, when I would say in January, we started seeing the World Health Organization and Chinese officials communicate what was going on in Wuhan province, where this really stepped off initially, was the notion that the takeaway was that young people were somehow immune to this, and that this was a disease that was most deadly for the elderly or people with pre-existing conditions. It's kind of a form of international telephone, if you will. Out of the experiences of Italy, which is a more transparent and more like our own in terms of how information is shared in the public health sector, we began to find out that young people indeed were susceptible, but while they may not, their prognosis may be better, it can be fatal for them. And most importantly, it's possible for them to be carriers of this virus, be asymptomatic, and not have a clue that they can actually put their elders at significant risk, or even their peers who might have an underlying condition that they are totally unaware of.
Bob, we know that this upcoming Monday, both the New York City and New Jersey will face their first full week under the mandated social distancing. What are the challenges you expect to present themselves?
Well, one of the things I have to do is assess exactly what is an essential worker. And in some ways, this is going to be a real eye-opener for people, because it's not just doctors, the brave nurses, doctors, firefighters that we would associate, but the critical part of the civil service that keeps life going and ensures that these folks can get to work to do their job. And so in this category of people would be the people at the grocery stores. It would be the clerks at the pharmacies. It would be all the public transit people who provide the way for people to get to work. So what they have to do is, I'll give you another great example, tow truck operators who are responsible for removing cars. I just did a story now for the chief leader about an NYPD a tow truck operator, a member of DC 37, who just did what he was supposed to do, removed a car that was abandoned. He found out later on through his union that a coronavirus person had actually left the car there to self-quarantine. So there you see the implications that we are still learning about. So what they have to do is public officials have to stand up a social safety net. They have to make sure that these essential workers, many of them single moms and dads, have a place that's safe for the children to go, and at the same time also create a virtual education system so that young people that can be at home can continue their education, and most importantly, the normalcy that will give us some additional reinforcement and character to get through this difficult time.
We're speaking with reporter Bob Henley here on the WBGO Journal. Finally, can you put this current crisis in some sort of historical context for us?
Well, I think that there really isn't any. I think probably the best example would be World War II, which sadly there are very few people around who experienced that. But those of us who were blessed with having robust conversations with our grandparents and parents can remember the discussion about the cohesion that existed in the United States during that time when we were fighting fascism. It is somewhat surreal that in the 21st century, the common enemy we face is an invisible virus. And also, I might add, the fear and greed that can spring up when we don't have faith and confidence in our neighbors. And indeed, that's what I remember taking away from my parents was a discussion about, for instance, things we may come to a point where certain key things are rationed. Back in the day, during the Second World War, the government actually had a system where people got their basics and what was essential based on a rationing card. And you wouldn't want to be a person in a neighborhood that violated that sense of civic engagement that came with participating and helping. And so I think that that's the template for us now. And I think that one of the things that we can all do is give support and an affirmation to the people that have no choice but to go to work, because for them, telecommuting is not an option.
WBGO's Bob Henley. Bob, thanks for all the updated information, and stay safe.
Thanks.